Is Nick?
No,
he's not here, right? Yeah, so we will have a quorum for a while. We'll have a quorum the whole time, but we won't have a super quorum. Okay, I think we are ready to begin. Welcome to the Thursday, June 13th meeting of the Portland City Council. Carla, will you please call the roll?
Fish, Saltzman.
Here.
Novick.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Hales.
Here. And we have an item on the calendar that you can read for us.
Do you want to read both of those now, or?
I think you have to read the item first, right?
Sure, read both items first.
Read both, okay. Yes. 574, consider the proposal of Black Backbridge Lofts, LLC, and the recommendation from the hearings officer for approval with conditions to change the comprehensive plan map designation from medium-density multi-dwelling to central residential, and the zoning map designation from R1 multi-dwelling residential to RX central residential, with a design overlay at the southeast corner of North Williams Avenue and Northeast Fremont Street, LU13109305CPZC. And item 575, amend the comprehensive plan map designation and change zoning of property at the southeast corner of North Williams Avenue and Northeast Fremont Street at the request of Backbridge Lofts, LLC, LU13109305CPZC.
Thank you very much. City Attorney has some required provisions that we need to get on the record up front, and so do I, so proceed.
Thank you. I have a few announcements I need to make at the outset of this hearing. They're required by state law in the city code. They will identify the kind of hearing we're having today, the order in which testimony will be presented, and then some guidelines for presenting testimony. First, this is an evidentiary hearing, which means you may submit new evidence to the City Council in support of your arguments. What the council is hearing today is a recommendation from the hearings officer on a proposed comprehensive plan map amendment and zone change. And the council will hear testimony on this recommendation in the following order. We'll begin with a staff report by BDS staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the city council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The applicant will go first and will have 15 minutes to address the council. And after the applicant, the council will hear from individuals or organizations who support the applicant's proposal. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak. Next, the council will hear from persons or organizations who oppose the applicant's proposal. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. If there was testimony in opposition to the applicant's proposal, the applicant will have 5 additional minutes to rebut testimony given in opposition to the proposal. The council may then close the hearing and deliberate. The council may vote today on the hearings officer's recommendation. If the vote is a tentative vote, the council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the hearings officer's recommendation. If the council takes a final vote on the findings and recommendations today, that will conclude the matter before the council. Finally, as to guidelines for presenting testimony, any letters or documents you wish to become part of the record, including maps, photos, or any other matter, should be submitted to the council clerk after you testify. Any items you show to the council during your testimony, including PowerPoint presentations, should be given to the council clerk to make sure they become part of the record. Your testimony, arguments, and evidence you present must be directed toward the applicable approval criteria for this land use review, or any other criteria in the city's comprehensive plan or zoning code that you believe apply to the decision. The BDS staff will identify the applicable approval criteria as part of their staff report to the council. You also must raise issues clearly enough to give the council and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue. If you don't, you'll be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. And finally, if the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues related to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow the council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court. That concludes the opening statements I need to make.
Okay, thank you. Now it's time to check and see if there are any potential conflicts of interest or ex parte contacts. So are there any council members who have ex parte contacts to disclose or potential conflicts of interest to note?
I have received a couple of emails on this issue, which after I saw there about this issue, I stopped reading, but I did see some.
And I've received many emails, which I have read, and for those that haven't yet been put in the record, I'll be CCing Carla with my responses.
Okay. And then I visited the site earlier this week with Ed McNamara on my staff. We visited the site and got a good view of the situation there to remind me of the circumstances, but we didn't speak with anyone there or including any of the parties to the hearing today. So anything else? Anyone have any questions about the council's declarations? Yes?
I was wondering, I didn't hear 15 minutes allotted.
No, that's right. There's a time allotted for a principal opponent, if there is one.
Yes. 3 minutes each for supporters of the applicant, 15 minutes for a principal opponent, 3 minutes for supporters of the principal opponent, and then the applicant can rebut for 5 minutes.
Okay.
My apologies.
Thank you. Okay, then let's begin the hearing. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Before we begin the hearing with a staff report, I do believe we need to take a procedural action here, which is that there's an emergency clause applied to one or both of these.
The first item, 574, is a report. The second
report.
Item
second
is
one.
The, is the ordinance,
yeah,
and that has
the ordinance,
the
which has
clause.
An emergency clause on it. And we are unlikely to maintain a quorum sufficient to pass an emergency ordinance, even if that was a good idea later today. So a motion would be in order to remove the emergency clause if that's the council's desire.
I would make that motion.
Second.
Any discussion? Anyone want to testify on that question? If not, then a roll call on the removal of the emergency clause, please.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, thank you. That's removed, and we can proceed with the staff report.
Thank you, Mayor Hales, Council Members Douglas Hardy with the Bureau of Development Services. The proposal you have before you today is, as was indicated, it's a Type 3 comprehensive plan map amendment from a medium-density multi-dwelling designation to the central residential comprehensive plan designation. It also includes a concurrent Type 3 zoning map amendment from multi-dwelling residential 1000 with a design overlay to the central residential or RX zone, also with a design overlay. The R1 zone, it is a multi-dwelling zone that would allow up to 33 dwelling units on the applicant site at a maximum building height of 45 feet. No non-residential uses are allowed outright in the R1 zone. The RX zone is also a multi-dwelling zone that allows both residential uses as well as some limited retail and office uses, typically on the ground level of the building. While buildings in the RX zone are allowed up to a maximum height of 100 feet, the maximum allowed floor area is limited to 4 times the size of the site. So this floor area limit typically results in a building that's considerably less than that 100 feet allowed height. The D or design overlay requires that any development be approved either through a public design review process or that development meets the community design standards at time of building permit review. The 33,000 square foot site is, as seen here in red, slightly over 33,000 square feet. It is a flat site located at the east side of Williams Avenue, south of Fremont. You have Ivy Street bordering the site to the south. And the site is located in the Elliott Neighborhood Association, and currently the site is entirely vacant. For a broader view, a vicinity map, the site is located on the southern edge of the Williams-Vancouver mixed-use corridor. Both Vancouver and Williams Avenue, as well as Northeast Fremont, are all designated transit streets. And all three streets are designated city bikeways with heavy bike use along Williams and Vancouver in particular. Properties typically to the east and west of that corridor are developed with single dwelling or low density multi-dwelling buildings. Whereas development along the corridor itself is pretty eclectic. It ranges from one to two-story commercial uses to mid-density residential uses. Institutional uses are also located along this corridor, including the Legacy Emanuel Hospital, located just south, about three blocks south of the site. As noted, the site itself is proposed to be rezoned to the RXD zone. As seen here in the zoning map, there's quite a variety of zoning in the surrounding area. Along the Williams-Vancouver corridor, you primarily see in this location EX zoning, or central employment zoning. The EX zone, it is a mixed-use zone that allows buildings up to 5 to 6 stories in height. This EX zone is bounded to the south by RX zoning, RX multi-dwelling zoning. You do see some multi-dwelling R1 zoning immediately south of the site and multi-dwelling R2 zoning immediately east of the site. And lastly, sort of catacorner to the site, northeast, is some R25 single-dwelling zoning on the north side of Fremont. Next, for a quick tour of the site and vicinity, this is a view of the site looking from the corner of Ivy and Williams, looking northeast across the site. As evident here, the site is entirely undeveloped. And a view looking north along North Williams with the site here to the right. Evident in this slide is a variety of densities and types of development found along the corridor. There is the one-story New Seasons development that's going on immediately west of the site across Williams. There's some mid-density multi-dwelling residential, one about a half block north along Williams. And then you do see some lower scale single dwelling residential uses along Fremont here. And also there is lower density single dwelling, 1 to 2 story dwelling along Ivy. So this is a view along the street south, immediately south of the site. While this area in the R2 zone is currently predominantly developed with single dwelling residences, as I mentioned earlier, the site is zoned R2. It is a multi-dwelling zone that allows buildings up to roughly 4 stories in height. And then moving again a little further south down the corridor along Vancouver, this is a photo of Legacy Emanuel Hospital. They have buildings various heights up to 8 to 9 stories in height. This next photo is a view just east of the site at the I-405 ramp near the cross street of Northeast Cook and Vancouver. It's located, again, about 2 to 3 blocks east of the applicant site. Both the Cook and Vancouver and the Cook and Williams intersections are basically heavily impacted by the ramp here. Particularly during the AM and peak hours, as vehicles obviously are coming in and going back and forth from that on-ramp. It does create traffic delays and potential safety risks, particularly with a heavy bike corridor that is along Vancouver-Williams. Both the applicant's traffic consultant, as well as the Portland Bureau of Transportation, have identified the need for traffic signals to be installed at both the Cook and Vancouver and Cook and Williams intersections. In terms of the approval criteria for the comprehensive plan map amendment, those are found in 33.810.050 of the zoning code. And for the zoning map amendment, those are found in 33.855.050 of the zoning code. The substantive approval criteria for the comprehensive plan map amendment is that the requested designation is on balance equally or more supportive of the comprehensive plan goals and policies than is the existing designation on the site. And the substantive zone map approval criteria addresses adequacy of public services, including water, police, fire, sanitary, stormwater, and transportation. As for the comprehensive plan map amendment, the hearings officer's report that you have before you identified more than 75 comprehensive plans and plan goals and policies that were relevant to the request and that were evaluated by the hearings officer. The hearings officer did include a table in the back of his report that identifies what those policies are, and he identified the relevancy of the policies to the requested proposal and identified whether the proposal was equally supportive, more supportive, or less supportive of the policy of these policies than the existing comprehensive plan map designation. And on balance, the hearings officer did find that the proposal, the hearings officer did find the proposal was less supportive of only two of the 75 plus policies that were evaluated. For the remainder of the comprehensive plan policies, the hearings officer did find the proposal to be equally or more supportive than the existing R1 designation on the site. Some of the key findings in the hearings officer's recommendation included these listed on the three bullets here. First was the RX Central Residential designation promotes increased opportunities for housing production on the site, and particularly on a site that that is supported by high-quality transit, pedestrian, and bicycle corridor. The hearings officer found that the proposal provides additional goods and services to area residences and employees and complements the existing commercial corridor, and that the neighborhood compatibility would largely be mitigated by development standards of the EX zone and requirements for design review.
Sorry, could you go back to that?
Yes.
Again? Sorry. Okay. Thank you.
As for the zoning map amendment, hearings officer did, as indicated earlier, reiterate the need for traffic signals at the Williams Cook and Vancouver Cook intersections, and basically included a condition that until those traffic signals are funded, that the number of vehicle trips associated with any development under the proposed designation would be limited to basically the number of vehicle trips that you could do under the existing R1 designation. And again, that condition would be removed once those two traffic signals were funded. So based on those recommendations, the hearings officer did recommend to council to approve both the comprehensive plan map and zoning map requests with that one condition of approval related to the traffic signals.
Can I ask a dumb question as a novice to this stuff? How do you enforce a condition like that?
It basically would be enforced at time of building permit. So if ultimately a council does approve the designation and it gets rezoned to RX, anytime the applicant came in with a building permit, planning and zoning staff would review it against that condition to make sure it was in conformance with that. If there was any question whether the traffic signals had been funded, planning and zoning would coordinate with Bureau of Transportation to determine whether that condition had been met.
So you sort of estimate how many trips would be generated by a particular building? You can't, like, sit there and, like, count the number of trips.
No. So the way the condition was written, there's a table, basically, that equates, it identifies different land use categories, equates the number of vehicle trips associated per square foot. So it effectively translates vehicle trips to square footage, so we could directly apply that at time of building permit.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
This application presumably came in before we changed the parking regulations.
What
would be the parking required in the new zone?
They would be required to meet the current the new parking regulations. So, assuming the building is over the 55 dwelling units, they would be required to provide the 0.33 parking spaces per unit. So the land use, this land use review by itself does not vest them under the old standards.
And if we thought in this particular location that that was not adequate, we could add a condition of approval requiring more parking?
Council could. You would have to address it per the applicable comprehensive plan goals and policies. As you may have noted for the hearings officer and his findings, that question did obviously come up at the hearings officer level from some surrounding neighbors. The way the related comprehensive plan policy reads is basically make all attempts to reduce the amount of parking, and particularly reduce the amount of parking along high-quality transit corridors. So the hearings officer, basically, his hands were tied from at least the comprehensive plan perspective.
Right. So I'll state up front that I'm struggling with this quasi-judicial zone change, knowing that we're currently revising our comprehensive plan and we're looking at the zoning for the entire area. So it's going to be challenging for me to figure out what the appropriate thing to do is. But under the current zoning, and why did the applicant go for RX versus EX versus R1?
In terms of going from R1 to either the EX or RX, and ultimately I'll let the applicant address that when he comes up, my understanding is the intent was to allow a mixed-use development at this corner, given the Vancouver-Williams corridor is a mixed-use commercial corridor. He basically wanted to participate, if you will, in that corridor and sort of improve the urban vitality of that corner. In terms of the EX versus the RX, the applicant, in fact, first did propose the EX EXD zone. In speaking with the Elliott Neighborhood Association, their, in fact, request was don't do the EX, do the RX, because they didn't basically want, my understanding is they didn't want to see basically a predominantly non-residential building at this corner. So the Elliott Neighborhood Association was the one basically recommending the RX as opposed to the EX zone.
And commercial is allowed in RX?
Limited commercial. You can have either 40% of the ground floor in retail or office, or if it's elsewhere in the building, up to 20% of the floor area can be either retail or office in the RX zone.
And EX, it's greater?
EX is a mixed-use zone. Basically, anything goes in the EX zone. It can go from industrial to housing to commercial.
And a related question for me, and I guess we will hear from the parties to the case on this question, but regardless of what the applicant proposes, is in a situation like this, is the planning staff free and or is the hearings officer free to recommend and consider a different zoning designation than someone has applied for? In other words, if they applied for RX, but mm-hmm. but you as a planner or the hearings officer as a hearings officer felt, no, EX would be more appropriate, is this a yes-no decision on the application, or do we have the opportunity in this situation to consider a third alternative, namely something else like that?
Right. Basically, staff is the responsibility is to review the proposal submitted by the applicant. At best, what we can do is work with the applicant to put conditions on what is requested in order to effectively get to a yes.
But you're not free under the process as we have it to say, I hear you that you'd like, R1, but I'm going to recommend R2.
Right, not unless the applicant voluntarily agrees over the course of that land use review to say, okay, I'm going to withdraw my RX request and propose a different zone. Right. And at that point, we'd probably have to start the whole land use review process over.
Okay. So the council is also not free to say no, would prefer something else?
You can certainly say that to the applicant, but in terms of agreeing to change the zone to something else besides what the applicant has asked for, no, you're not free to do
that.
It's basically a thumbs up, thumbs down on what they've asked for.
Yeah. So that option obviously exists in the legislative process, but not in the quasi-judicial
Correct.
Process when we're considering an application.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I needed that refreshment myself. Other questions from counsel for staff? Okay. Thank you, Douglas.
Thank you. Thank you.
So let's move to presentation from the applicant.
Mayor Hales, I was reminded by the council clerk that I may have misstated the time limits in my opening announcement. The goal of the time limits is to give the applicant and the principal opponent equal amounts of time, and typically that's divided into 10 minutes for the applicant's main presentation and then 5 minutes for rebuttal. I indicated the applicant would have 15 minutes for a main presentation and then 5 minutes for rebuttal. So the choice would be either to limit the applicant to 10 minutes with the 5 for the rebuttal and give the principal opponent 15 minutes, or leave it at 15 and 5 and give the principal opponent 20 minutes. So the two are equal.
Unless there are strong feelings on the council's part, I'd rather err on the side of completeness, given that we don't have 150 people here to testify, and go with the longer time limits. Is that okay?
All right. My apologies for misstating that.
No problem. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Ben Kaiser, the applicant, and to my left is Destin Ferdin, who assisted me in this process, which started probably about a year ago. I'm an architect and a developer here in Portland, and I've been practicing architecture and development for the past 20 years or so. And over the last 15 years, I've been in predominantly north and northeast, kind of focused on infill development, small-scale residential condominium projects. And also for the last 7 years, I've been a member of the Portland Design Commission. And as you're all aware, it's stated in the website, it provides leadership and expertise on urban design and architecture and on maintaining and enhancing Portland's historical and architectural heritage. And so I've been very privileged to sit on that group with six other great people from around the community who, and I have to say that I've learned more on that commission than I think I've actually offered back. The site I purchased back in 2004, it's approximately 32,000 feet, and in 2004 it sat on that property and the property across the street sat on the market for about a year and a half, and no one wanted it. That section, that intersection, which is quickly becoming very exciting, I think was long overlooked by the city of Portland, and it always befuddled me because it's one of the most critical hubs and intersections in the city. I think it's responsible for the linkage to downtown from the Sabin, Irvington, Alameda neighborhoods, as well as North Portland and beyond. It's heavily used, but for reasons both known and unknown, it laid fallow and was overlooked. What we're working on now, we're working in a couple locations around that area. To the north of Fremont, what's pretty exciting, was we're working on a building called the Radiator, and we have some team members to the south of us right along Fremont, and together we're developing, in my opinion, a pretty innovative project, and this is just good background for what we're talking about today, in that we're breaking ground on a few substantive issues, such as one of the first eco-districts in quite a few years here. We've recently drilled beneath Fremont and hooked into New Seasons, taking their excess heat off their condensers, which alone will allow about 40,000 feet of building to be heated annually for no cost. And now we just made a great breakthrough, and Emmanuel Hospital is at the table with us, and they have their north plant, which is about 1,400 feet from this site, and they've agreed to get into negotiations about allowing all their excess heat, which has the capacity to heat over 800,000 square feet of building and the potential to cool it as well. So our site to the north of Fremont and this site in question today, we are anxious and working on making that connection, which will be a first in Portland. And in that process, like I say, over the last 6 months, 8 months, we've worked with PBOT and the Franchise Department and ODOT, as well as New Seasons and Emmanuel Hospital and local and area property owners. And all, I have to say, have been very, it's been a really exciting process because everybody's worked very well together, and the hurdles are, we're overcoming hurdles one by one and actually may pull this off. As you all know, an eco-district is an extremely hard undertaking, and we're pretty excited about the potential there. The EX, as was mentioned by Mr. Hardy, we originally proposed an EX because the only intent that I had with that rezone was so to enable the project not to have residential doors right along Fremont and Williams. As we all know, that a residential door that happens along a busy corridor like that usually ends up in Venetian blinds that are closed full-time and completely deactivate a street. And probably the most important subject that comes up on the Design Commission is exactly the opposite, how to activate a street. So for an R1 designation to land along busy corridors, along a part of the city that we want to be dense and active, I thought that was inappropriate. So I went to the Neighborhood Association asking for an EX. The Neighborhood Association proposed actually an RX, as you heard from Mr. Hardy. The reason for that is an EX would allow only commercial. So in other words, that whole 32,000 feet under an EX designation could be a Walgreens with a surface parking lot. And we all know examples of that. And if, in my opinion, that's another way, I think the neighborhood, the land chair, and the rest of the group was understandably questioning the idea that that could be just a full lot Walgreens, single level, and not at all kind of living up to the hopes and aspirations that we have as a city of high-density corridors and mixed-use operation that kind of takes advantage of those corridors. So that's why we then said, okay, we totally understand, because we always wanted to have a mixed-use project anyway. And so the RX designation, if that was going to be the request to the Neighborhood Association, that's the direction we went with the application. In this, the one partnership I left out is PBOT. We have worked well because the problems in that area, both for this site in question today as well as the New Season site in both north and south, is the lack of signaling at the two intersections on Cook. So we've worked with PBOT to kind of offer one of the first public-private partnership on paying for those. So area landowners, including New Seasons and my partners and partners to the north and south, are agreeing to pay for one of those signals. And so that's exciting, and I think that'll be a great improvement for the area as well. There's been some concern and understandable concern about from the neighborhood about me finishing this zone change and then selling the property. Because as we know, the RX designation or EX or whatever the designation may be just goes with the property, not necessarily with the team that's in place to develop it. But I have no intention of selling the property. I've been working too hard, too long to make this whole intersection come together. So we already have a great team in place to make this come to fruition. So I'm excited about that. I did want to just touch on as a developer, I want to just read something I wrote down here. For many decades, we as a city have been working very hard on improving our urban planning, and as a result, are now respected around the world for our past decisions and present results. The ideas of 20-minute neighborhoods, a dense urban core, mixed-use buildings, a strong public transportation system, a very vibrant bike community, the decision to de-emphasize automobiles, and nodes of high density interspersed amongst existing neighborhoods are all ideas that are working together, in my opinion, to achieve visions set in motion by brilliant forward thinkers from our past. These past decisions are so respected and so successful, in fact, that we have had international visitors from around the world studying our city and the public policies that we put in practice here. And we've had a couple visitors from Canada come to past Design Commission meetings as well. Change is difficult for all of us. I understand that. Going forward, there are going to be uncomfortable moments, such as today, and I'm sure we'll hear from some folks behind me, as we seek to achieve these overarching visions of an exciting, resilient, dense, diverse, and environmentally evolved city. In my opinion, then, we can't disregard these public policies that have been put into place for exactly this reason, to monitor and control these developments. And to that note, I just want to pause and say that I'm making a pledge today, and I don't know how we can commemorate this, but that I will go through a design review process and not use the community design standards. And I think community design standards have had some negative effects in the neighborhood and around the city of Portland. So I think as a city we need to revisit those. And I have great respect for the staff at design review level to kind of work out these issues. I also had a great meeting this morning with the principal opponent and agreed that another good thing that we can do is in this project and maybe even push farther into the city's fabric is in the design review process have a group of the interested community members part of that process, and that hasn't usually been the case in my experience so far, but on this case maybe we can work out something with the opponents that are here today to form some kind of coalition that works with me and our team to make sure, and the design review process and staff, to get to something that I think we all like. And that is our intent as architects, as our intent as developers. Our intent is my office is in the area and I live in the area. So we're all there. Also, as we know, a zone change is a very public and pretty expensive process. This has been in the works for over a year now. Site postings, public mailings, neighborhood notifications, and multiple meetings with neighbors. In my opinion, these 11th hour and beyond now we're having as a city disagreements are sending the wrong message, in my opinion, to the architecture, development, and construction community. And I think it has a negative effect in that it could undermine the very relationships that I think we're working on building. So I, not to say that this is an 11th hour event, but only to speak about the neighborhood and outreach, we're doing the best we can in the development architecture world and as a city staff and as a city policy. Mailings to 500 feet, we put up signs on the property. And these have all been months and months ago. So it's interesting, these last-minute changes are kind of catch everybody off guard. So I think we as a city, and that I'm not faulting the community on that, I'm actually faulting somehow the process that we need to refine to get that message out. And we, the principal opponent, opponent and I have had some good discussions about how to change that. So there still seems to be a disconnect between the process and the public. In a, I went on to say about how we would like to use a design review process, and we'll continue to work, like I say, with staff and the neighbors to get to the best project we can. So thank you. And Destin helped with the whole application, and it was a very thorough, great application, in my opinion. So any questions you have for either of us, we're happy to answer.
Please.
So many of the concerns that I've heard from neighbors through emails in the record are about the height. And would you be willing to have a condition of approval limiting the height?
We discussed that this morning, and I think it would be interesting conversation to have where that limit is and what the limit is. But, yes, I would absolutely enjoy that conversation to arrive at some balance.
So the EX zone, I believe the height there is 55 feet.
65
feet. Would that be acceptable, workable?
Well, I think what's interesting about FAR, as you are all aware, and height limits is both work in tandem to come up with a great project. So I think if we, on this site in particular, work with the Neighborhood Association and the design review process, we can, if we're allowed a little more height along the northeast or northwest corner of the site, we can actually diminish the pressures on the R2 zone to the east. So, and on that note, I wanted to mention that there's a burned-out house to the east of the site in question today on the along Fremont. We recently purchased that burned-out house. So right then we'll have a 50-foot R2 buffer that is limited by its constraints. So already we've just added a 50-foot buffer to our project along Fremont. And we will work, I've mentioned this morning, what I would like to do is work with the through the design review process of transferring FAR so we can have that as true open space, and that's all through the process of with design review. So I'm open to that as well. But and also to address your earlier question about parking, what's really exciting in my opinion is the teaming that we're building in that neighborhood. So in my opinion, the churches are growing very quickly in that area, and there's a direct problem with morning brunches on Sunday morning now with the kind of success of area restaurants. So we've been working with the churches because I agree there's a parking problem that's on the horizon. So actually we're working with PDC right now, talking to PDC as well as Carl Talton at United Family Funds to actually dig a deeper parking garage to not only take care of our project, but take care of the other projects that have no opportunity for expanding their parking, because not only this is not only our project, but and again I call this a success for the city. That whole corridor, the amount of units and projects in the work is dumbfounding. It's the density is going to infill just as we all hoped, again in my opinion. So I think to get a jump on this parking issue, we're all about that. And so I would actually like to put more parking than we need on our site and help alleviate some of the pressures in the neighborhood.
And you plan to do underground parking?
Yes.
Thank you.
So the you mentioned purchasing the next parcel to the east, which has the burned out house on it. Looks like that might have been subject to some other land use application at some point, that parcel. But at any rate, you would intend to develop that to its base zoning as part of this project, or perhaps separately, or you don't know yet? Or
that's a good question, Mayor. I would, I don't know yet, but I would not seek a zone change on it, so it's going to remain in R2. So what I would envision seeing it as an architect is kind of just even further stepping down towards the R2 to the east. So we'll use it whether it's access to the site in some way, but right now it's exciting because we have that 50-foot buffer that's just by right of the property.
So. Thank you. Good. Other questions for the applicant team? Anything else that you want to add at this point? Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Then do we have any folks, individuals signed up in support of the application?
I have two more people signed up, Mike Warwick and Lee Perlman.
Good afternoon. Come on up.
I'm Mike Warwick. I am the land use chair at the Elliott Neighborhood Association, and I've lived in my house in Elliott for 36 years, so I've seen a lot of stuff go on there, and I was instrumental, along with Lee and a number of other people, in the development of the Elliott Plan, which was a subpart of the Albina Community Plan. I recognize there's a lot of other people here speaking in opposition to this, so it seems a little peculiar for the Neighborhood Association to be supporting a project, and I'd like to make it clear that I think once you hear all the testimony, this is not a case of the Neighborhood Association being a bunch of elitists that don't listen to the neighbors. That's really not the case. I really enjoyed your exchange with the applicant, Amanda and Charlie, about what was and wasn't allowed with the zone change decision. That was exactly the situation we were put in when this came before us. When we developed the Albina Plan, the area where New Seasons is today was a major employment center. It was Wonder Bread. Nobody anticipated that it would go bankrupt and that the site would be redeveloped as a grocery store, which Elliott is totally thrilled with. In fact, I think the last time I was here was to testify in support of the New Seasons project. Obviously, that changes the dynamics of this corridor, which has been happening north of Elliott and along Williams, north of Fremont, for several years. So when the applicant came to us and said, I have a housing project, and this is not the first time he's come to us to talk about a housing project at this site or is the properties he owned across Fremont, as he discussed. He's one of the more forward-thinking, I guess, developers. He comes to us frequently with ideas about things he'd like to do on his property, so we're not blindsided. So we're well acquainted with Ben and his projects and his thinking, and he is one of the more creative developers in town. And he said, well, now that the New Seasons is going in, I'd like to do more ground floor commercial, and I can't do that in the R1 zone. So I'd be looking to do something like EX. Elliott's experience with people who go for an EX zone change is one of two things. They either immediately sell the site based on its higher value, or they put in something like Walgreens that is more parking lot than building. In the Albina plan and in the Elliott part of the Albina plan, our focus on the sites we targeted for e-zoning was, as E says, employment. The people in the neighborhood then, as now, need jobs. We have a moral obligation to try and make sure that the e-zone is used that way. Unfortunately, as has been, as the hearings officer said, you can do anything in those zones, and we've seen churches, and we've seen low-income housing, and we've seen other projects go on those sites that have not added a single living wage job to the neighborhood, and that's really unfortunate. Now, don't begrudge I guess I'm over time.
Sorry, go ahead and wrap up.
Okay. So we were looking at the same decision. We said rather than endorse an EX zone that would allow Ben, if he chose to, or some successor, to develop something that did not have a housing component, we said, well, let's go for RX. We propose that you use RX. We'd support that, but we would not support an EX zone. He considered it and said, that makes sense to me. Then we raised the question, which the opponents are raising, which is, you know, this will allow a 100-foot-tall building, and we do not want to see something that looks like the six-story buildings north of Fremont. And he said, that's not my intent. My intent is to have ground floor commercial, residential project. At the time, he was considering condos, which would be very compatible, I think, with our housing goals. And that made sense. Now, you may have a different development scheme in mind today, but at the time, we were depending on his intentions and his trustworthiness to us as a developer, because we have worked with him a number of times over the years in projects and have confidence that if he can, he has the wherewithal to follow through, he will follow through on what he says he's going to do. And that's how I reached the decision we reached.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate the context.
My name is Lee Perlman. I live at 512 Northeast Brzee Street. I'm a newcomer compared to Mike, just 30 years there. Nearly all of that time member of the Elliott Neighborhood Association, past land use chair, and one of the part of the committee that wrote the Elliott Neighborhood Plan. As part of that, I would say that this doesn't meet the letter of the plan. If it did, we wouldn't be here. But I do believe it meets the intent and spirit of it. When we started work on that in 1989, the neighborhood had lost more than half of its housing over the previous 30 years for some highly publicized things like some manuals, a board of expansion, Rose Quarter, freeways. A lot of it also block by block. Three residential structures on my block alone have been gone in the time that I've been there. We felt we needed to restore that housing to provide a viable neighborhood, and also to provide a level of housing for people who perhaps could not afford home ownership. We did not want to lose the single-family housing we have left. We zoned it R2 and kind of hoped that nobody would tear down sound housing. Our solution was, in long vacant parcels, to zone it for fairly high density. We had set a goal of 1,000 new housing units. We're not going to make it. There are other places where development has taken place at less than the projected density, so here it's a little more. There is another important provision of the Elliott Plan, which is very strong language against residential to commercial zone changes. That was critical. That's how we lost a lot of our housing, the view of people that this is a temporary use and treat it as such. So we're partial to Mr. Kaiser's proposal, but we said we would absolutely fight EXD. I would also say that I believe our position on this is that we support it in principle. Mayor Hales, Commissioner Fritz, Mr. Kaiser, you're all familiar with the phrase, how not weather. So we have yet to see the proposal. It's subject to differences there.
Questions?
So I appreciate the historical context from you two who've both lived in the neighborhood for over 30 years and were part of the Albina plan. I'm not quite understanding the trusting the applicant to do this plan with RX versus not trusting him to do an EX similar plan, but with residential, but also with more commercial on the ground floor.
Yeah, we can't tell Ben what he can and can't do once he has the zone change. Now, Ben has had some other projects and other properties that he's owned that he has disposed of. So we're certainly willing to trust him to a point, but we want to see housing on the site, and the R zone stipulates that it will be used for housing. Whereas if he did, for some reason, gets hit by a bus or whatever, and the property goes to somebody else, they could do the parking lot with a small building on it.
Mm-hmm. I would add that there is a greater level of risk if he pursued EXD. An example might have been a kind of low-level industrial use on Martin Luther King Boulevard called the Raven Creamery. Low-impact, family-wage jobs, nice. At their request, we gave them EXD zoning. Within a year, they had been bought out, and the property was declared surplus. Next proposed use, McDonald's, and a long battle over that.
So it sounds like you, and I haven't yet asked the city attorney or any of my colleagues whether they're interested in this, but if there was an option for allowing more commercial on the ground floor, that the neighborhood association, that's you want more family wage jobs.
I think that's correct. I'm not sure, to go to that point, I'm not sure that the kind of retail that you're going to get on the ground floor of these buildings is going to result in living wage jobs necessarily. New Seasons clearly does. You know, a 2,000-square-foot ice cream parlor, probably not, which is why we have large parcels zoned for EX. More commercial certainly would be better if the entire floor plate was commercial along Williams. I think that'd be much more desirable than just 40% of the floor plate, but depending on how he configures the property, he may get all of that. So, yes, again, since we can't put conditions on our position, although you can, anything that would allow that with conditions would be something we'd certainly be welcome to see.
Thank you. And then my last question, based on the feedback that you've heard from your neighbors, and I know that you do have an inclusive process at the Neighborhood Association, what do you think would be a height limit that would be reasonable?
When we talked to Ben about that, you know, he said clearly we do not want to see the six-story building that looks like the Albert north of Fremont. But we did talk about, as he noted in his comments, perhaps you could have the building mass so that on the corner of Fremont and Williams, it would be a tower or something that would be a bit of a gateway that would be more prominent than just a flat building would be. And that could be something where the massing would be sorted out so that with the FAR you could get there. I don't expect to see a 100-foot-tall building there, but I'm not an architect, and I don't know how much room each floor needs to be for what it is he's trying to do. So I can't say it should be 65 feet, it should be 75. I have no clue. That's where we kind of have to trust him a bit. And you know, that's where the faith comes in on this process.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, the applicant mentioned in his testimony his willingness to go through the design review process as opposed to following the standards, and also proposed some potential community review element to the design review process, at least in this case. What are your reactions to those suggested potential conditions?
We certainly welcome that idea. I do have to say that our experience with the design review process in terms of the designs that come out of it being respectful of the historic nature of Elliott's residential areas have not been very good. So I don't have a lot of confidence that process is going to turn into something. But on this particular location where it fronts a brand new commercial building and looks out on an institutional setting, I'm not too worried. Obviously, the step-down issue is the bigger concern, both of the neighbors and of us, because that's how you protect the historic core of Elliott. And we had extensive discussion of that in the Northeast Quadrant planning process, and that is one of the things that came out of it that I think we're pretty happy with. So I know that's the neighbor's concern. It's our concern as well. I mean, on the Land Use Committee, we do not want to see an Albert-style building right up abutting single-family residences. That's just insanity. But Ben said he wasn't going to do that. I have some confidence he wouldn't do that. And any kind of design review requirements that he's willing to accept, we're all for.
Yeah. I might say I disagree slightly with Mr. Warwick, not the first time.
No.
I have a lot more confidence in design review process than I do in the design standards.
Okay. Oh, that's true.
And a question later for staff, would it be a type 3 review that would come back to council? It would only be a 2. See, that's a problem, because if it were a type 3, then we would have the
sign-off.
That's right.
Yeah, this process has some flaws in it.
Yeah. Yeah, but still, given the choice of a type 2 design review process versus the application of the community design standards,
we prefer the design review.
Design review. Okay. Just wanted to get that clear in the record.
So. Absolutely right, yeah.
Good. Any other questions? Thank you both very much. Anyone else signed up as a supporter of the application?
That's all I had.
Okay, then let's hear from the principal opponent. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hold on one second. My name is Paul Van Orden. I've been a resident at 52 Northeast Fremont for the last 16 plus years. Honorable Mayor Hales and members of the City Council, I intentionally chose to move to this neighborhood over 16 years ago to be an active part of one of the last neighborhoods that offers true diversity and an abundance of culture for its neighbors. I'm testifying in opposition today to elements of the project, not as a NIMBY-styled neighbor, but rather as an engaged member of my community. I sincerely believe the bigger dialogue that helps the city reach successful urban planning implementation is an equal balance of three primary elements. These are the developer's proposals, the design review and city staff portion of a project or a review phase, and finally, and most important, is the input of the actual community members. This hearing today is one of the few opportunities that is open to citizens to offer their input on the project and to help shape where the vision of our community may be directed. I want to state first for the record that I'm thankful for all the hard work of city staff. For city staff on this difficult land use decision and its related impact on other city bureaus. I recognize how hard city staff work to find solutions that balance out the needs of the community members who live in neighborhoods and the desire of Portland as a community to become a more dense, vibrant, and livable city. I have the utmost respect for hearings officer Greg Frank and planning staff assigned to this case. I had a conversation with the developer today further clarifying community concerns regarding the site and the potential for far too open-ended development to take place that could radically transform our community. After our most recent conversation, I believe the developer, the nearby neighbors, and the Elliott Neighborhood Association may be in far more agreement on how to proceed than disagreement. My testimony is intended to support a decision that ensures an equitable balance for the community members who live here and that we will not face yet another poorly designed project in our neighborhood. I want to speak initially to the transportation elements, and in the code hearings officer's decision on page 40, there's an element B on page 40 of the approval.
40, okay.
And in that particular element, I'll just read a initial segment. It says, until funding has been approved to install traffic signals at the intersection of North Williams Avenue, North Cook Street, and North Vancouver Avenue, North Cook Street, uses on this site under the RX zone are limited to a total of 25 new weekday PM peak hour trips. And so I just wanted to comment that the code hearings officer has taken what I see as an unprecedented stance on this project, recommending that city council include a requirement for a specific set of intersection-related improvements before the highest density of development, or as spelled out in the recommendation, the maximum number of trips can be achieved. I cannot recall seeing this intense of a condition on a comprehensive plan map or zoning map amendment in my 17 years as a citizen following land use decisions. I feel for the record that this concern is serious enough as to raise valid questions as to whether or not the added infrastructure of the new intersection improvements will handle the added maximum new weekday PM peak hour trips. We would ask for a modification of the recommendation of the hearings officer to require that the project not move forward at whatever density and massing is approved until the funding is not only identified for the intersections, but the completion of the actual work on the intersections is completely finished to address the traffic issues. If the decision is held over today in any capacity, I would respectfully ask for access to any transportation analysis documents and potentially a community meeting with some of the helpful staff in the Bureau of the Portland Bureau of Transportation so we can further understand as a community the potential ability to find a balance with these increased trips through our community. On the issue of massing, which is really a major issue for the community here, Elliott Neighborhood, better known historically as Albina, is truly one of the oldest sections of the Portland metro region. The house next door to my home